This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Holy, what? We got breaking news to open hour number 3 of the G-Bag Nation. Got the hour right, which is always something that I strive for. It's the most important thing in the show. We got breaking college football news here in hour number 3 of the G-Bag Nation, as it's official. We were talking about this last hour. Big Ten is going to be the first one to go official with it, but the Big Ten has announced that they're going to be going conference-only scheduling model for the 2020 football season, if the season's played at all. Stemming from concerns of playing amid the coronavirus pandemic, the first Power 5 conference to announce major alterations to its schedule. They say, quote, if the conference is able to participate in fall sports, based on medical advice, it'll move to conference-only schedules in those sports. By limiting competition to other Big Ten institutions, the conference will have the greatest flexibility to adjust its own operations throughout the season and make quick decisions in real time based on the most current evolving medical advice and the fluid nature of the pandemic. So they're the first ones, Big Ten. They've announced their regular schedule is out of there. It'll be only in conference games that they're going to play in the 2020 season. And how quickly will we hear all the other 4 Power 5 conferences say the same thing, Brian, by tomorrow?
Yeah, well, what this means is the SEC will pick up all those games that the Big Ten doesn't want to play.
Oh, they're going to go up there and have a 19-game season?
Yeah, the SEC is just going to play them all. No, I think that, you know, I think the Big Ten, and I felt like that conference, you know, commissioners had this all in mind because they could, like they, in the statement there, they could better control what's going on at their member universities. They could say, you know, hey, Indiana, you're the same as Purdue. Ohio State, you're the same as Michigan. They, you know, when you're working with outside, yeah, you work with these other schools for games and stuff and scheduling, it's important. But now it's about, okay, how can we contain things the best? It's almost like having the bubble town. You know, you're saying, okay, we know what we have to do. We know what each one of these teams are up against, and we can control that. And we're going to see a lot of other conferences do the very same thing here.
And because we believe in all the sports, Brian, since we're big cricket fans and every other sport, I think it's worth noting this is not just football. This is every fall sport: men's and women's cross country, field hockey, football, men's and women's soccer, and women's volleyball. All in the Big Ten will just be conference games, and every other conference will probably soon follow.
Yeah, and what was sad though, Jeff, is the other day, and I think it was yesterday, I'm sorry, that Stanford cut a bunch of programs off their varsity program. I mean, there were like 11 different, you know, men's and women's programs that they removed, and one of them was volleyball. And Stanford has always had their men's volleyball team has always been like a nationally ranked, you know, they're you know, high. When you start talking about the, you know, the final tournaments and stuff, Stanford was always in the mix. So I feel bad for those kids that, yeah, they're going out there. They get a great education from Stanford, but if their programs have cut, you know, will these kids leave and go somewhere else? I mean, I'm sure Stanford has to open that up for them. But if we're starting to see cuts of these programs, that's going to be the last thing that we really want to have to endure here.
And that's something that college should have to figure out, because like Stanford is a big school that gets a lot of donations from alums, and like, okay, so
endowment is huge,
yeah. Right? But you lose like the NCAA tournament, and now the Ivy League is not going to play football, and that's your money, right? Yeah. So all of the Power 5 schools, you make your money off of the NCAA tournament in basketball, and you make your money off of football, and those things fund everything else, which we're definitely finding out since Stanford has to cancel sports.
Right.
And that's not right.
No.
And the fact that, like, if football can drive so much money that it can make all of your sports survive,
yeah,
that has to be on you as a school to decide, do we want these sports? Because if they're not self-sustaining, it's not cool to say, oh, football doesn't deserve to get paid when they generate enough money to keep a school's entire athletics going.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate, because if you go back and Google Stanford and the commissioner's trophy that's given for, you know, the team or the university that has the most highly ranked programs, men and women, Stanford wins that thing every year, it seems like.
Yeah.
Their swimming program, their like the volleyball, the baseball. I mean, they've got all these programs that if you look at their overall, I mean, they're so productive and acclaimed. And now you're saying, wait a minute, here's a university that has all these and they're cutting 11 of them?
They need to figure out how to monetize those sports.
You need to figure that out. And it's tough. I guarantee you there's people out there listening and, you know, they're saying, oh, well, you know, who cares about fencing and all that? No, you care about fencing if your son or daughter is doing it, or gymnastics or volleyball. You care. You know, your child is getting to go. Now, I just hope that Stanford continues to honor the scholarships of those kids. You know, I mean, you're at a great place. You're getting a great education. You're there, you know, helping them win championships. And it's just got to be so disheartening for those kids to know that a lot of their dreams have been now just shattered because of this pandemic, and because a program like Stanford can't afford to continue to have their sports. That's just hard to believe for that program to be like that.
So that is your breaking college football and sports news. The other thing that I wanted to, and by the way, I'm seeing on the text, and I'm trying to see if I can find this somewhere, that's saying that the ACC is doing this too. Randy Peterson on Twitter said, when asked if the Big 12 planned to announce soon the likelihood of a conference football games only plan, Commissioner Bob Bowlesby responded to me one word: no. So the Big 12 won't be announcing that today, or at least not right this second. Okay, the other thing I wanted to get to was a little bit of Mavericks here. So MavsMoneyball.com, they just did kind of a reset. Okay, we're in the bubble. The Mavericks are now in the bubble. Let's kind of restack this thing and talk about the Mavericks roster, and I think it's really interesting. And for me, it kind of highlights, I feel like in March or maybe February, the Mavericks were one of the deepest teams in basketball. Now, they're not the Mavericks missing Avery, or the Lakers missing Avery Bradley, or it's not Oladipo not playing for the Pacers. But without Jalen Brunson, Dwight Powell, and Courtney Lee,
well, they've suffered. They're hurt.
This
already
isn't a deep team anymore.
No, it really isn't.
So I'm going through, and it's like, okay, so you talk about the guards, and their starters are Luka and Seth Curry, and sure, you got no problem with that. And you've got DeLon Wright for depth there, which is, that's fine. J.J. Barea for whatever he brings, and Trey Burke. But then I'm looking like, okay, here's the wings. Tim Hardaway and Dorian Finney-Smith. Okay. I'm not comfortable with any of the bench guys. Like Justin Jackson.
Yeah.
When he plays well, okay. But on the season, look at his shooting percentages from 2 and 3. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Antonius Cleveland, and Josh Reeves. This team is going to be really top-heavy for a team that we thought was going to be one of the deeper teams in basketball. When you really look at it right now, you go, okay, the top 7 guys on this team are going to need to play heavy minutes and play really good basketball.
Well, we've talked about this some too, about, and Chris Arnold brought this up about J.J. Barea. You know,
yep.
And J.J. has won a championship. He's battle-tested. You know, Chris is very well connected to what goes on with the Mavs. If you're telling me a guy that I can get off the bench that can provide some, you know, some instant offense if you need it, yeah, J.J. is capable of doing that. He's capable of, you know, putting up some points, but he's, you know, capable of running the offense, you know, getting the ball to where it needs to go, not making mistakes. You know, if that's one of your bench players, I'm with you. I don't feel totally great.
It's JJ. It's DeLon Wright.
I know.
And it's
and I
Maxie that I feel like on that bench.
Yeah, and I wanted to believe in Justin Jackson. I really do. And I think the Mavericks wanted to believe in Justin Jackson too. And then if you watched, you know, right before the pandemic, there were a couple of times where Justin Jackson never took off the long sleeve shirt. You know, he sat there on the bench, and he was a guy you would have hugged after a victory because he wasn't going to get your suit sweaty.
Well, you don't want to hug people after a victory anymore with the COVID.
No, not with the COVID. Yeah. You don't want to do that. Away. But you know, if you wanted to give the guy a hug, you know, he's a guy to hug because he's not going to sweat on you. But, you know, but they tried. And, you know, there were times where he was taking some quality shots. He was knocking them down. And then all of a sudden, he just all went away from him. And it looked like that he got scared. You know, it's like, okay, I don't want to shoot now. You know, and I was kind of like thinking, well, if he doesn't want to shoot, then he's no good to me right now. You know, the confidence was, and you know, maybe with the time off that he could kind of on the side, he was working on some things, maybe getting a little bit better, maybe getting a little bit more confident. But I do understand what you're saying about the bench, because it did look like a strength at one point in time. Then all of a sudden you started blowing Achilles and shoulders were getting hurt and all kinds of things were happening.
All right, Brian, it's the G-Bag Nation, and I'd like you to join me at a funeral procession for one of my favorite plays in football that we have to dig a hole about 6 feet down and bury.
Oh, I know where you're going with this. And this is a play you probably were pretty good at.
It was my favorite play ever. We say goodbye.
Were you good on the separating part of it?
Nope.
Okay.
But I was good at offensive PI that didn't get called.
Okay.
Going up and getting that thing.
You can push off with the best of them, huh?
We say goodbye to the fade route.
Oh.
Mina Kimes writing for ESPN.
Good writer.
She is. She's great.
Good person, too.
She said she was talking on the phone to Calvin Johnson, Megatron.
He's one of the best.
And she let him know. She said, "Do you know how many fades were caught inside the 5-yard line last year?" He said, "How many?" And she said, "5 total." And he said, "I'm sorry, only 5 were caught?
Yeah.
Maybe somebody could use me." And yes, we have reached the point where the nerds are going to win this one. It's been going down every year. Last year, the fade was only attempted 37 times in the entire league inside the 5-yard line, and only 5 of the 37 were caught. We are losing the fade route, and coaches are going to have to catch up to this, because one offensive coach, when asked about it, said, "Well, if you're throwing a fade, you don't trust your quarterback. People get conservative because they already have points. They think we've got a field goal anyways." Well, here's a stat for that coach. Last year, that fade resulted in 2 interceptions, which is 5.4% of the time that a ball was thrown. Every other throw was exactly half that, 2.7%. And the rate you score at is about 3 or 4 times higher if you throw an out, a slant. There was 1 PI called on a fade, way less than were called on slants and outs and flats. And so it's with a heavy heart that, as a 6'3" former wide receiver, who, when I saw a 5'9 DB, it was go time, baby. It's over for us. We don't have it anymore. Goodbye to the fade. Congrats, nerds. You happy? 877-881-1053 is the Autoflex Leasing fan text. If you have a goodbye message for the fade route, it died with Dez Bryant. That was the end.
You ready for the fullback to die too, Jeff? Is that what you're talking about?
Not pass away, but be extinct from being in the league and on rosters. Yeah,
sure.
unless you're Kyle Shanahan, you can go ahead and get rid of that. I approve. You have my stamp of approval. Coming up next in the G-Bag Nation, let's talk to our buddy Joel Corey, writer for CBS Sports. He's a former agent, about the Pat Mahomes deal and what it means for Dak. It's next in the Nation. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time to visit with our buddy Joel Corey of CBS Sports, former agent, about the Pat Mahomes contract, what it means for Dak. Will more contracts start looking like that? This segment is brought to you by state-of-the-art weight loss and Frankel & Frankel. If you've been injured in an accident with a work truck or an 18-wheeler, call 214-333-3333 or frankelfirm.com, Principal Office, Dallas, Texas. Let's bring him in, Joel Corey. He's thanks so much for your time this afternoon, Joel.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
You are welcome. I've seen that you've been writing about it, and you're our go-to guy when it comes to contracts and anything in that regard as a former agent, and we love checking out your stuff. So the Pat Mahomes contract itself is it's a little bit of an anomaly as far as our NFL history is concerned. Are other quarterbacks going to see anything like that, or what about it makes that likely or unlikely?
Oh, you hit the word nail on the head with the word anomaly. It's going to continue to be an anomaly because, one, I don't think teams, for the most part, are going to want to have the give a player the security that is in the deal for Mahomes. It's not your conventional long deal like the Tyron Smith deal that once the bonus proration runs out that for the initial signing bonus, and if you don't restructure, but the Cowboys have a couple of times, then you can cut the guy at your whatever best suits you. In this case, you're on the hook for tons of money when you try to cut Mahomes, because the bulk of his money each year is in third day of the league year roster bonuses. And as you get to the midpoint of the contract, those roster bonuses are not only guaranteed, they're guaranteed a year early. Like in 2027, he's got a $49.4 million roster bonus on the third day of that league year. But it becomes fully guaranteed on the third day of the 2026 league year, and almost $40 million roster bonus in 2026 becomes fully guaranteed on the third day of the 25 league year. So,
can I interrupt for a second, Joel? Because I looked at that contract, and my immediate thought was this thing's getting restructured and extended again in 2025, because I don't see him eating that $60 million cap hit in 2027.
Yeah, that's possible. I'm just saying you can't cut him.
Right.
Getting to the point where you can't cut the guy. But you're right, it could get restructured. Or at some point, they are going to start kicking the can down the road because the cap numbers are starting to get pretty high. They're over $40 million for most of the years in the deal, and particularly that year, 2027, you're almost 60. So at some point, they're going to be pushing money from the roster bonus into signing bonus, adding proration into the deal when none existed. So if you still wanted to cut him then, you couldn't. I don't know if they're going to restructure from the standpoint that we're going to rip it up and then give him more money, but it's not going to stay in the same form it is today. And that's going to make it harder to cut him. Plus, he has a no-trade clause, so you can't get rid of him and ship him someplace else unless he wants to go someplace else.
Joel, is this a contract, or the way this starts out, is this something that comes from Steinberg, or is this something that the Chiefs said, hey, let's try and do it this way? Who would start a contract this way in your view?
I can't imagine a team would introduce this concept, because we've seen with quarterbacks that the contracts have been going shorter, that the longest contract we have for a quarterback making a lot of money near the top of the market is Matt Ryan's 5-year extension, 5 new years. This is double the new years. So I would have to think, and I could be wrong, that this was a Lee Steinberg, Chris Cabot invention, that they're the ones who proposed the concept, and the Chiefs were happy to have a guy who potentially could go down as the greatest quarterback to play the game from what we've seen his first couple of years, locked up until he's basically 37.
So while the Cowboys and Dak Prescott have 6 days left to the franchise tag workout a deal deadline, what can both sides, Todd France and Dak and then Jerry and Stephen Jones, what can both sides take from this to add to their ammunition?
Yeah, that's the thing. It gives both sides something that they can hang their hat on, because Jerry can go, hey, he's Mahomes signed for 10. We want 5. Why can't you do 5? He's doing 10. And then Todd France can go, hey, we've gone from 35 to 45 as the highest paid player in the league. If Dallas ever told him that they were comfortable making him the second highest paid player in the league, he's going to hang that around their neck, because that means he's going to get more than Russell Wilson's $35 million per year. And the question would be where you fall in that spectrum. The thing is, the cash flow in this Mahomes deal is not great. It's a backloaded deal. If you get through the first 5 new years, you're not even at $40 million per year. You're at 39.55. And then when you're talking like the first 4 new years, you're at $38.95 million per year. So those are going to serve as like upper limits for Dak. But, yeah, both sides can point to this thing and use it as ammunition to help strengthen their respective cases.
What if Watson got done here in the next 2 days? How do you think that would affect the Cowboys? I mean, can Watson go a totally another direction here, Joel, and make like give either side more ammunition? I mean, is this something that the Cowboys are looking at and like, this doesn't affect us at all? We're locked into what we want to do. This is our plan. You know, could Watson muddy the waters here as we get closer?
Yeah, I've always said that if either one of these two guys got done, then it was going to affect negotiations, good, bad, for one side. And Watson reportedly is wanting to go the opposite tack, that he wants a 3-year extension. And Bill O'Brien, since he's become GM, has made some curious trades and dramatically reset the offensive tackle, offensive line market with Laremy Tunsil, went from 18 to 22. So if he does and he gives Deshaun Watson a 3-year extension and it's like at $40 million per year, then, yeah, Todd France is going to use that, and I don't know how Jerry is going to be able to ignore that, because anytime a deal comes in which is favorable to the team, they'll try to use it to their benefit. So when the shoe's on the other foot, you can't just ignore a deal. The thing is, Mahomes deal, just kind of gives both sides something that they can kind of point to and doesn't really help one side more than the other, because it's such an unusual deal. But Deshaun Watson doing something would probably favor Dak Prescott.
It's Joel Corey with us, CBS Sports. You can find his stuff that he writes there, former agent. And it's always hard for me to picture a starting quarterback that the team wants around finding their way out of town. But if the Cowboys don't get a deal done in the next 6 days, doesn't a deal next offseason with the potential tag numbers and everything, doesn't it make it highly unlikely that they would work one out?
Yeah, Kirk Cousins wanted to be a Redskin until he didn't want to be a Redskin, and part of that not wanting to be a Redskin was how they treated him in the offers. That, from my understanding, is when he was first franchised, that the agent was like, we'll sign a deal for like $52 to $55 million over 3. In hindsight, the Redskins should have taken that. And then when he got to the second franchise tag, he didn't really want to negotiate. If Dax will be almost 37, the franchise tag, next year. So the hard part was last year playing for $2 million. So if you play for 31 and you have to play for 37 again and you're looking at over $54 million for a third franchise tag, at some point Dak may go, you know what, I want to be here, but you guys have dragged your feet. You act like you don't want to make a commitment to me. I don't really want to make a commitment anymore either. If it got to that point, I still think that this thing gets done at the 11th hour, like the Dez Bryant thing was done right before the franchise deadline 5 years ago. But yeah, that's a very real consideration.
Joel, how do you account for, and I guess it's like the crystal ball where you're kind of saying, okay, you know, revenue, TV dollars, all these things. As an agent, how do you account for that when you're going forward in future years? It's something we always say, well, they're waiting for the TV money, but we really don't understand what that's all about. How does an agent walk his client through that type of discussion?
Well, that's why you go shorter, because it's an unknown variable right now. But one thing we have seen universally throughout every sport is when TV deals come up, they go up dramatically, and that in turn, if it's a cap sport, pushes the cap way up. Now, this is a little bit different landscape because of the coronavirus, where there's going to be a revenue drop, and the question is going to be, is the cap going to drop precipitously next year, or are we going to have a smoothing out of any losses over multiple years because we have a labor piece until 2031? So are we going to have the cap stay flat for maybe 2-3 years, if that, and then jump? So you really don't want to lock yourself in. You'll explain that to the client and explain to the client that there are other types of revenue streams which aren't being factored in the equation that could be significant, like the gambling piece. So you don't really want to lock yourself in. That's one of the things that was surprising about Mahomes. That's not factored in the equation, because if revenues do eventually take off, he's locked in where he is, and you're going to see a bunch of guys surpass him over time. Because typically you do a long-term deal, at some point you're underpaid.
Joel, if it's accurate that it's more about the years than the money with the Cowboys and Dak, and they both end up holding firm and no deal gets done, who would you view as at fault that should have given a little in that scenario?
I view Dallas at fault because Dallas should have made him a priority before Russell Wilson got done last in April 2019, because you knew they were negotiating, and Russell put a clock on it, basically told him, we get this thing done now, don't talk to me again if we don't. Fortunately for Dallas, Dak hasn't done that, and you knew that he was going to become the highest paid player. You had to have some inkling that maybe the Rams, since they're always proactive, that Todd Gurley is a running back after he played 3 years, and maybe Jared Goff gets done. Same agent. Eagles have been proactive. They did Lane Johnson the first time around with 3 years. So you kind of had an inkling that maybe those two deals get done. So if you tried to beat all those deals to the marketplace, you would have been better off. Because the longer you wait with someone you want to keep around, the more it's going to cost you. Same thing with DeMarcus Lawrence. Made him play in a franchise tag once, would have been under $20 million per year because there weren't any $20 million per year pass rushers. And you have Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, and then you're paying him basically $21 million a year. So I put it on Dallas.
I'm going to ask you to represent Dak Prescott here. Okay, we're down to basically a week. What's our game plan now? As we sit here and have discussions and we're calling Dak, what as an agent, what is your game plan now with 7 days out?
Oh, I'm holding firm with the 4 years. I would tell Jerry, yeah, you want to do a 10-year deal with the home structure where I also have an out someplace in there or a way to get out. Yeah, I would consider that. And by the structure, I mean the guarantee structure, but with conventional cash flow, because I don't have 2 years left, so my cash flow has to be the cash flow from day one, not this depressed cash flow because he had $27 million he was already scheduled to get. And if not, we need to focus on a four. If I had my client allowed me to do this, because remember, the agent works for the client, not right. The other way around, I would tell Jerry, my client's signing for 4 years. It can be right now, 4 year deal, but I factor the franchise tag in as 1 year. If we do this next year, it's a 3 year deal. And if you're not comfortable with that, then maybe if I had a client who was willing, then maybe you should think about something else with my guy where it makes sense for everybody to move forward in a different direction. I may not have signed the franchise tag right now like Dak did, because I don't think there was any chance that they were ever going to pull it under any circumstance.
Joel, do you think a team should ever pay a running back big money in a salary cap league?
For the most part, no. But I thought it made sense for Dallas when it was done from this standpoint. He was the focal point of the offense. But I wouldn't have paid Ezekiel Elliott, not because of the role, because I wouldn't have rewarded the negative behavior. That I would have told him, you know what, until you can keep your nose clean, I don't want to see any negative headlines from some foolishness. I'm not paying you. You can hold out till the cows come home. But they went ahead and paid him, which also probably created a problem with Dak, because if I'm Dak and Dak's agent, I'm like, you're rewarding him. I'm like, he's great. That's my boy, but you're rewarding him, and I do everything right. What gives? But generally, no, I wouldn't want to pay a running back because it doesn't make sense for most teams. I think that's one of the reasons why Derrick Henry may not get paid, even though on that team he's the most important offensive player or the best offensive player.
We appreciate you, Joel. CBS Sports, we're going to encourage everybody to check out your work, and we love it. Thanks, man.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, there he goes. It's Joel Corey, CBS Sports. Coming up next, we'll go around the NFL in the G-Bag Nation. The commissioner of the Big Ten, Kevin Warren, just said to Big Ten Network's Mike Hall, we may not have sports in the fall. Certainly not breaking news, but as the tweet says, important to hear someone of his influence willing to address this publicly as the clock is ticking on the season. So that's the Big Ten commissioner saying we might not have sports in the fall. That's where we're at. But it's time to go around the NFL and the nation. NFL will power through, won't they, Brian? I'm going to have something, aren't I?
Yeah.
All right. As long as here's first down.
You got it?
Oh, Brian, I have 36 downs over here, but I'm a pass first.
Oh, you're a pass first guy? All right. Well, how about this? I'll do this for you then. Pete Carroll, he's taking my approach.
Oh, Pete Carroll.
Him, Pete and I. God, I hope I look that good when I'm that old. It'll never happen.
No, it won't.
He's like, what, 70? 75, whatever, 73. And
yeah, I just got my new skincare products in yesterday, so I'm already trying to plan my Pete Carroll journey.
Man, he just – I hope I look that good. That's all I can say. Pete Carroll says, you know, he's not worried about his players being prepared for if there's no preseason. He's completely comfortable with the idea of not playing any preseason games at all.
Of course. They don't run pass plays.
Yeah. Actually, Carroll's 68 years old. I just noticed this. He's like comparing the situation to college football where every single game counts in the standings. He says, it's like college football, Carroll said. That's what college football is. You don't have any preseason games. Every game counts. You start from game one without having to play against anyone. That's just the way it is. I'm very comfortable with that, though. I don't know what the rest of the league thinks about it. You know, they probably would like to play games, Pete.
I mean, look, the preseason is, for most of your roster, overrated. It's, you know, it's entirely too long, but I enjoy the purpose of it. The purpose of it is figuring out who's going to make the back of your roster. That's the purpose, the real purpose of the preseason. Most of your guys, I don't need to risk your health in a practice game, and it's why they don't. So, like, I totally get what he's saying. Yeah, I would love it for guys who are fighting to be player number 50 and 51, 2, and 3. I would love it to have you have more opportunities in a game situation to prove that you belong on the team. But for most of our guys, we know. We know what they're doing. They know where to line up. They know the plays. They're ready to play football. They don't need all this.
How many college coaches do we have that are head coaches, by the way? Pete Carroll would be one. USC, he was incredible at USC. Oh, got a guy at Arizona, right? Cliff?
Yeah, Cliff.
We got the guy at Carolina, right?
Yeah, Rule.
Anybody else?
I'd have to pull up a list, but yeah.
I mean, guys that were college head coaches that came in the league.
Yeah, there's got to be more than that. I'm just bad at top of the head exercises. Oh, I know.
I'm sorry.
Looking things up.
Yeah,
I'm the worst.
But those are the ones that came to mind because there's the thought that these guys would know how to get their team ready, and then you start thinking about, well, Belichick can't get his guys ready.
Yeah, he's like, what are you talking about? This is not normal.
I was never a college head coach. I mean, Belichick, watch him. He's not going to do a very good job.
I promise you, Belichick won't be the problem. I think Belichick will. I don't care what the circumstances are. I bet you he's going to figure out how to have his team ready.
Oh, no, they'll be ready. But
they'll run illegal practices. That's what they'll do.
Oh, they're practicing right now. They're in full pads out there.
They're going to play games. I don't know against who, but they will play secret games and not tell anybody. That's what the Patriots are going to do.
Okay, let me ask you this real quick. Do you think we play a full schedule, or do you think they just do the same thing where maybe they play 10 games total? Maybe they do something where they back it up into October and,
I've already been wrong because college football would try to power through, and now I'm starting to see with the Big Ten, like, they're not canceling or moving anything yet, but mm-hmm. It sure sounds like that's where the momentum's headed. But the NFL, I view as this machine that's going to be like, dude, we don't care. Like, we're going to play, and we're going to make our money, and that's what we're going to do.
They might even have fans in the stands.
Yeah. Like, the Ravens are talking about 14,000 fans. Yeah.
Well, in theory, if you played a game at AT&T tomorrow, they put 50,000 in there, or 45 or whatever. They'd say half capacity. Go get them, Tiger. So I'll probably be wrong again, but that's my gut about the NFL, is that they're going to proceed as planned unless somebody stops them.
Yeah, I don't disagree with it. I think the prudent thing would be to give them the month of September and just try and kind of get things under control. Maybe you have a lot of cases. Maybe you can get some guys back and then just get into your, you know, get into your schedule. Play your conference schedule, you know. Play your NFC West and then play your NFC East and then, you know, figure it out from there.
Yeah.
That's what I would think that would be the best way to go, but I at one time the NFL had time. Now they don't. They sat back and watched everybody else try and scramble to get a season together, and they were the one group that was like, "We'll be fine. We'll be fine. We'll be fine." And now he's like, "We've got no plan. I haven't seen a plan."
Well,
you know, the players are all complaining. No plan. What's our plan?
That's our big picture problem. Is I don't think we have a plan.
We don't have a plan.
Second down. This is big, Brian.
Okay.
This is a big moment in show history. There's a Shine 9 out.
No.
Adam Shine is trying out to be unbanned from the show. He's trying out. published an article. He's been banned up until now, but we're gonna bring him back on a probationary basis and see what his content is and decide if his ban is lifted or not.
All right.
So he's not unbanned.
You're being fair, I think.
He's on a probationary period.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL's most complete teams for 2020.
Oh, I like this.
On the Shine 9.
He's liable to mess this up, though.
Number 9.
Okay.
The Indianapolis Colts.
Okay.
He loves this team.
He does love this team.
Great offensive line.
Absolutely.
Maybe the best in the league. They add Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman in the draft. Phillip Rivers coming off a down year. Defense wasn't bad last year, but they should take a step forward after adding DeForest Buckner. You know, get that guy up front there. You still got Darius Leonard, Anthony Walker. So number 9 is the Indianapolis Colts on his probationary period.
Mm-hmm.
Shine goes on. Number 8, Cleveland. Let's go.
Oh, he had them as number 1 last year.
This is our year. This is it.
You guys are all fools.
Gobs of talent across the roster. Baker, splendid rookie campaign before regressing last year.
Rookie head coach.
New coach?
Yeah.
Stefanski, uh-huh. You know?
Run that
Jack
rock.
Conklin, yeah. Jedrick Wills. Hey, in Cleveland, go ahead.
Run that rock, right?
Chubb's better than 5 a carry.
Okay.
Give it to that man.
I just want to make sure that when we show up on Monday and the scores are 17-10 every Cleveland game. You're okay with that.
No, if they lose, I'll blame it on them running the ball too much.
Okay.
Odell Beckham bouncing back healthy. Jarvis Landry, Austin Hooper, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, Miles Garrett. It's a squad. Number 8.
Heartbreakers.
Number 7. Here's your heartbreakers. Dallas Cowboys.
Oh.
Did you think they would be higher on a complete team list?
We talk about holes. We've talked about some holes.
Yeah, like the defensive half.
Yeah. No right end. Who's the corners?
Are they any good? Are the linebackers going to be good?
Linebackers healthy enough? Yeah.
Dallas oozes offensive talent.
He's using the word ooze a lot.
Zeke, one of the top running backs. Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb trio at receiver is dreamy. Lamb was highway robbery at 17. He's going to be a star. With Mike McCarthy coaching him up, Dak will dominate and put up gaudy numbers. Okay. Don't be surprised when the offense carries Dallas to the number 1 overall seed in the NFC.
Then why are they 7th?
Well, losing Byron Jones was a blow to the defense. Mm-hmm. Dallas still has horses on that side. I still believe in Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith. DeMarcus Lawrence and Gerald McCoy should present plenty of problems for opposing offensive lines.
Okay, this was Shine talking, not you. That wasn't you.
No, I was Shine.
I was just making sure. I was just making sure.
877-881-1053, when you hear this list, Shine, still banned? Or do we lift his ban? Number 6, the Buffalo Bills.
That quarterback plays incredible there.
That quarterback is awful. But they got a great running back that throws a lot of passes in Josh Allen. Added Stephon Diggs.
I've never heard him say that way.
With John Brown and Cole Beasley, Devin Singletary and Zach Moss at running back, but their defense is awesome.
Yeah.
Second in points allowed last year, third in total defense.
Real
front
close.
Strong seven, very strong. The front seven is very reboot. The front seven is very strong. Tremaine Edmund.
Welcome to my world.
Tremaine Edmonds emerging as a dynamic young linebacker. Tre'Davious White is a stud. Not flashy, but definitely one of the league's best teams or rosters. Number 5, he goes Tampa Bay. They got all the receivers, and they brought Gronk back, and they got Brady. He believes in the defense. He said in the second half of last season when the secondary started to show up, top tier, Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh. Shaq Barrett, Jason Pierre-Paul, Levante David, Devin White. Damn it, that is a good team. Crap. Brady's going to win. Not the Super Bowl, though. Number 4, New Orleans Saints, locked and loaded again. Adding Cesar Ruiz to the O-line.
Like that move myself.
Got Zach Bond in the 3rd round.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Brees is still good. Kamara come back healthy. Marcus Davenport. Saints is a good roster. He's got him as the 3rd most complete team. Fourth.
Fourth, yeah.
Third is the Kansas City Chiefs. Patty's good. Offense good. Offense real good. Yeah. Defense, they got Chris Jones. They got Tyrann Mathieu. And they got Frank Clark. That's about what they got.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he knows what complete means.
Yeah.
You don't get to just take Pat Mahomes and put him third if you don't think they're complete. Two is the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, that's a good roster.
Real good roster. Just
trade away DeForest Buckner, get a first-round pick, replace him with Javon Kinlaw on a rookie deal. Nick Bosa out there. The front is awesome. They add Brandon Ayuk to replace Emmanuel Sanders. Now, Raheem Mostert wants to be traded.
He does.
But that is number two for him. And number one's the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar and them. Defense is starting to be stacked up, too. Patrick Queen jumping in there. Marlon Humphrey, Calais Campbell, Derek Wolfe. Baltimore is going to win the Super Bowl.
Do you like Dallas better than Buffalo and Tampa?
As an entire roster?
I don't know. Not Buffalo.
No, I don't.
I think I would take Buffalo over Tampa.
And I think I agree with you.
And I think I would move Tampa to 7, Dallas to 6, Buffalo to 5. That would be me.
I like what you're doing there. I'll go with you on all of that. Coming up next, it's time for Cowboys Twitter. By the way, we got Charles Robinson joining us, senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. But it's time for Cowboys Twitter next, the best and worst case for every NFC East team. You'll have it here in the nation.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.